And so, knowledge of certain formulas. We are guarding ourselves from drowning, being overcome by water, being engulfed by the water element. What actually happens if we do become engulfed by the water element? Why is that a disadvantage? Or is it?
We're talking about the emotion and...
Yeah, the emotional body just becomes out of control, I imagine, and dominates everything else.
Renders all plans futile, right? It's kind of hard to stick to what you intend if you're always being thrown off course by what you like and don't like. You know, I go for this, I run away from that. You can't hold the center, you can't achieve according to your intentions. We all know that people who can be overcome by emotion at any moment are not reliable.
They're not,
right? No. I mean, I think, you know, that in the dramatic arts, there's a place for it. There's a place for people who are so emotionally responsive that they are spontaneous and interesting in that way and can act out for us what we might not be able to demonstrate so easily. Mm. But even there has to be strict control with the mind to be a really good actor, really. You have to have both.
With people, can you? You are so emotional.
Yeah.
No reasoning.
Yes, it weakens you, and, you know, it prevents the love energy from actually working. In other words, desire and love are not the same thing. It can cover the sun. You see, it shuts out the sun. That was the word. Engulfs the swimmer, shuts out the sun, and renders all plans useless, futile. All right, so that's what it is to be overcome. And, you know, humanity today, the great majority of people, there's not so much emotional control. No, as a matter of fact, in these countries that are just... I keep on looking at some of these wars that are going on in Africa and in other places, and it really is emotional adherence to a fixed idea. There's not...
Tribal, of course.
Yeah, that.
A lot of that is tribal.
Yeah. And what is tribal except defending your own ego in terms of the family, right? A tribe is ego in a larger sense. And you have a huge emotional investment in it. And it is right and others are wrong. It's all based on attraction, repulsion, and there's no real broad understanding. Well, you know, people are where they are. That's the amazing thing. And you cannot expect that people will suddenly be able to jump to the mental, reasonable level. It's not going to happen overnight. So we have to... It's forces as they are apportioned all over the earth, and we have to deal with the forces as they are, without wishful thinking that suddenly they will become reasonable. Just like intuitive people looking upon rational people can say, well, they're not suddenly going to become intuitive. So any leader has a very tough problem at the moment, because there are masses of people who can be swayed by a demagogue without reason. All right, certain formulas. We're talking about certain formulas. These formulas are three in number. First, those which blend the two notes and add a third, and thus call into activity the builders of the astral plane, the Agni Suryans, in some one or other of their grades. So what are the two notes? The first note is the sound of the ego. These are based on the initiatory sound of the ego, and distinguish between it and the note of the builders and the tiny and lives of the tiny thought form already formed. Because the note is one thing, but the tiny thought form has its own note. There is the note of the man, the note of the soul, and the note of the tiny thought form. These are the three notes. The formula is chanted on the basis of these three notes, variation of tone and note, though not of formula, producing the types of forms. Whoa, it's very precise, isn't it? Very precise. Let's look at that again. Formulas which blend the two notes, the man and the ego, and add a third, and thus call into activity the builders of the astral plane, the Agni Suryas. So the third note apparently is related to the Agni Suryas, blending all notes involved in creation. The third note appears to be related to certain types of astral builders or Agni Suryas. In some one or other of their grades, I suppose, according to the note, so is the grade of Agni Surya. These formulas, I suppose, are based on the initiatory sound of the ego, which starts the magical process going, and distinguish between it and the sound of the note of the builders and of the tiny thought form already formed. The formula is chanted on the basis of these three notes, variation of tone and note, though not a formula producing types of forms. So here's the question. Are these three notes, what are these three notes? Let's see if we can see what they are. What are they exactly? And I have two thoughts. One is the ego, the man, and the Agni Suryas. That's one way of looking at it. The other is the ego, the Agni Suryas, and the thought form itself. Which is it?
I think it's the top one, the man, the
maybe it will tell us a little bit later, because, you know, it says, then shall the second sound go forth. So we studied yesterday that the man, on his own plane, sends forth a second sound to reinforce the creation that he is making on the mental plane. The solar angel determined the nature of the creation, more or less. The man picked up the vibration and is meditating with the solar angel, and then sends his own sacred word forth to reinforce the quality. But the little creation itself, with the notes of all the builders involved, has its own note. We know that the thought form has its own note. The question is, are the Agni Suryas involved part of that note? I think so. Anyway, these are technicalities. Okay. And then I got into some discussion about the tonic subdominant and dominant, but that's not so utterly important. All right, there are three formulas. So the first one is a formula based on three notes. The second is a formula of insulation. Those which are of a purely protective nature. What was the purpose of the first formula? You said they were based on the initiatory sound of the ego. I suppose the purpose of this first formula is to blend and harmonize the notes, I think. Purpose of the first formula, to blend and harmonize. And, you know, why do that? Why blend and harmonize the note of the ego, the man, and the thought form? Why do that? Why do that? What do you think? What happens if the man is out of tune with the ego?
Nothing really happens.
Well, or if it does, it won't be what the ego intended, will it? Right, right. And what happens if the man has good intentions, but somehow is creating something on the mental plane which does not fulfill his good intentions because he doesn't have the skill or ability to do that? Then what do you have? You have what's to be done by the ego, the good intentions of the man who is unskillful, and a thought form which does not reflect the intention of the ego or the man. That can happen too, right? In other words, you know, you've seen this a lot of times. People want to create something good, but they just don't have the ability to do it. You've seen that. But if we have the harmonization of all of those notes, then we will have right creation. Man is the instrument of the ego, right? And the thought form is what? The product? The product of the creative act? Like, for instance, when you receive from the ego an intention, are you necessarily capable of reproducing that intention as a creation? Not necessarily. Suppose, okay, I'll give you an example. Suppose you're a student of piano. You go and you hear a master pianist. You're all inspired. You are a pianist, and you say, okay, now I want to reproduce that somehow. Well, you have good intentions, and you actually took in what it was, but your instrument isn't ready yet. See? Or you say, ah, that composer. Wow, that's fantastic. I want to now, I'm inspired, now I want to compose. And you find out that your capability, even with the best of intentions, is not equal to mirroring the inspirational impulse. So what does this tell us that we have to do as human instruments on the physical plane? You know, really, shape up. Which is Vulcan? Mercury? Mercury is skill, Vulcan is strength. You know, Vulcan is training. Saturn too. In other words, train the instrument to reflect the intention of the solar engine or the inspiring source. Oh, learn how to type. The instrument knows the words, but the fingers won't produce it. The product lacks. Okay. Well, you know, I guess, how much training is going to be required of us? You know, training, pattern, repetition, routining, until you can just... Suppose you're a member of a commando unit, and you have this military mission, and you don't know how to put your rifle together in the dark. You know how they do? They practice, you know, so everything goes together. But you don't know how to do that. You have good intentions, and you're off on a mission, and you can't do that. So we have a lot of training that, required of us. I think if we really knew how hard it was all at once, few there would be among us who would make the effort. We are allowed incrementally to realize the demand. You know, you come to the master and say, okay, master, I'm ready. Look, I've done this. Well, there's one more thing you might want to try. Then you do it, and you come back, well, I did it. Well, there's one more thing, and you're led by these one more things up that steep mountain road until you discover how far you've really gone, being lured on by one more requirement at a time. You know, in other words, we're only allowed, in a way, to see a couple of steps ahead, that's all. Because if we were to see too far ahead, given the usual human psyche, we know what would happen. Quit. We'd quit. Discouragement. You know, we sit down at the side of the road and have a picnic or die or cry or whatever, instead of to keep going. So, you know, it's a bit like the man, would you rather have incremental karma or karma all at once? What would you prefer?
Incremental.
Would you like incremental? You remember that I told you the story about the companion of Blavatsky called T. Subha Ro, a very high Brahmin, the equal of Blavatsky in initiatory rank. He asked his master to give him his karma all at once, and he got it. If you want to read about it, you can. It's not a pretty story. But, you know, some horrible disease, he got some horrible disease, and he died.
But, or
was it?
Yeah, but didn't he come up in big lumps?
Yes, he had those horrible, horrible growths. Imagine all the unresolved chaotic energy working out in your system as these Hodgkin's kind of thing and all that. Would you rather have it incrementally or all at once? Incremental or not at all, thanks. Well, you know, it's a big question. You know, you can be sure that after a horrible experience, you'd feel a whole lot better, wouldn't you? While you're watching all of those people year after year go through incremental doses of their own poison. I'm still thinking about
you
it.
First.
Your book in the Bible,
Job, yes.
If you ask him to get it all in at the same time.
Was Job another one? And then what happened? Everything, right?
Everything
that could go wrong happened.
He got the full impact.
Well, it does give you pause, doesn't it? You know, because the whole idea of getting what you ask for and so forth. I suppose if you do address your soul or the master and say, okay, I'm ready, let it happen, I suppose it will happen. Ah, well, we'll deal with that later.
That's the release.
Yes, that's the requirement of this course. Okay, next there's a formula of insulation. Those which are of purely protective nature and which, through a knowledge of the laws of sound as they are known in connection with water, place a vacuum between the magician and the waters. These are the air atoms that I was talking about. And I think there might be some kind of Buddhic involvement in this, as well as between him and his creation, because we don't want that creation to come back and find a home in our aura. You know what I mean? You know, I suppose many of us have had the experience where we have children and we send them out into the world. But do you know they manage to come back? It's okay, you know, I mean, it's okay if they don't come back forever. You know what I mean? Because it's hard on them psychologically and it's hard on the parent. When you send forth your creation, you hope it's strong enough to manage on its own, really. That doesn't mean you're not compassionate, because it's a very tough world. I think of what it meant for me to make a living when I was a young person, and what it means for people, young people, to go out and try to make a living now. It's a much harder economic situation. So it does bring people maybe back to the nuclear family and so forth. But you know what I mean? It can become an unhealthy relationship, because both parties feel they've failed. And that brews up an unhappy interaction. So you don't want your thought form coming back and finding a home within you, within your aura. Or it will drain you, as we will learn here. Okay.
This protection, I think about the moon. The moon.
Right.
But there is esoteric astrology, when the DK says about cancer, the sign cancer, is giving hints about the moon as a protector.
As a protector. Well, The moon per se, maybe that which the moon symbolizes, perhaps. He does tell us, or Blavatsky tells us about the moon per se, that it is, it has a poisonous effect on the earth at the present time. And that we don't want to go back there, nor do we want to go back to what the moon symbolizes in our chart generally. But of course, the moon is also the symbol of each one of the lunar vehicles, Uranus, Neptune, and Vulcan. And from that point of view, it is something that has to be transformed and is useful and so forth, our habit nature. But the moon per se, right now, he says it's just a body in space, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it vampirizes its child, the Earth. Interesting. Anyway, a vacuum is placed, and look, it's not just a question of knowing the laws of sound, it's knowing the laws of which sounds are to be used in relation to the water element. So you see how much technical information is missing here, but just enough to make us patient, because people who don't know about this will perhaps think that they can just go ahead with various false words and other confusing methods. So anyway, here's a protective mantra. The formula is based on the sounds connected with air as well. For it is through the placing around himself of a protecting shell of air atoms, esoterically understood, that the magician guards himself from the approach of the water builders. Now, when I see the word esoteric, I'm very alert, because it usually means a very high thing. For instance, I'm going to point out to you a page here in esoteric psychology where the term esoteric is used. And it's right here. He tells us about the rays of Uranus, Saturn, and Neptune. And here's what he says. Esoterically speaking, the planets which are the expression of the three major rays are ray 1, Uranus, ray 2, Neptune, ray 3, Saturn. Esoterically speaking. Now we already know the soul rays of those planets, so he's not going down farther and telling us about a lower ray, he's telling us about a higher ray. So in this particular case, the word esoteric means the monadic ray. And oftentimes the word points in that direction. There are a few other examples of this where esoteric points to the word monad, or at least some high spiritual factor. So when we come back here and he says, for it is through the placing around him of a protective shell of air atoms esoterically understood, it's probably Buddhic atoms. This is what strikes me. And that somehow it is like the idea of the love or the harmonizing energy of the Buddhic plane, which is protecting the creator. Now, look, I could be wrong about this, but the hints for me are pointing in the right direction. I don't know where else we're going to get air atoms, what they would mean. I don't think they're mental atoms. I think they have some sort of, when you can touch the soul is full of Buddhic energy. Solar fire is full of Buddhic energy. And I think that's what's being used here by the soul-aligned white magician. Now, maybe there's another definition here, I don't know, but that's what occurs to me first. Do you have, yes? The air is life. The air is life. It's the first level of the cosmic ethers, the living area of the cosmic physical plane. The air is life. We are studying Formula One in the Moria Federation, I'll point to what Lona was indicating here. It goes like this, deep in the tree, between the roots and flowers, the eye again is seen, the eye that knows, the eye that sees, the directing eye, one made of fire, that's the monad, one fluid as the sea, that's the soul, and two which look from here to there, that's the realm of duality or the personality. It's the disciple and the personality, actually. Fire, water, and the earth all need the vital air. The air is life. The air is God. So that's esoteric air. Esoteric air. So, now here's what I'm not sure about. Probably a black magician or a strictly mental magician can also protect himself from water elementals. Probably, I would think. But he does not contact the Buddhic plane. And he does not contact the love energy of the soul. He is not using solar fire. How does he do it then? Well, these are the technicalities of the science of magic for the future decades and centuries. And if we're careful in our preparation, the day will come when we can be magical scientists and know exactly what we're doing. So, This formula is based on sounds connected with air as well, for it is through the placing around himself of a protecting shell of air atoms, esoterically understood, that the magician guards himself from the approach of the water builders. Now, it can't be just atmospheric air, because how could you use them to protect anything on the astral plane? You couldn't, you know. So it's got to be more subtle than that. Anyway, suffice it to say, there are protective mantras, and we'll get into how they can be given to us, whether by the master, by the soul, or by the recovery of our memory. All right.
What comes to mind for me is
yes.
To breathe on the breath of God. You know,
right,
it
right.
has that same connotation, doesn't it?
Yes,
it's
yes.
Protection.
Yes. Of course, and also remember that the breathing exercises relate to prana. So breath and prana go together, air, breath, and prana. And they are called, so actually you bring up an important point. So let us put it down. Let us not forget the vital airs and how they could be involved in the protective process. Yet, the protection must involve the astral plane, and the vital airs are etheric. So, you know, there are puzzles here for us, but if we hold the problem in our mind, then the solution can come, even though it doesn't come immediately. Here's a third, okay, so what do we have so far? A formula which blends three notes. It harmonizes everything so that the thought form really does harmoniously reflect the intention. Then we have protective formulas. Who's being protected? The magician is being protected from the waters and also from his own creation. Is it possible to create a creation which will return to haunt you? Know what I mean? Matter of fact, that is the way it is, you know. You just can't get rid of your creation. Somehow they are connected to you. Unless you know, and even if you know how to snap the link and you send that creation out in the world, it will return to sender if it is selfish. Mm. He tells us about this. Because there's a negative vortex which pulls it back. Whereas if it's a selfless creation, it goes out and takes part in the larger whole. But a selfish creation returns to sender. So that's pretty good about, you know, what does that warn us about our words and our thoughts, right? In this area here, in White Magic, on page 475, he says, here's the word of hate. These are words. The cruel speech which ruins those who feel its spell, the poisonous gossip passed along because it gives the thrill. These words kill the flickering impulses of the soul, cut at the roots of life, and so bring death. If spoken in the light of day, just retribution will they bring. When spoken and then registered as lies, they strengthen the illusory world in which the speaker lives and hold him back from liberation. And here it is, this one. If uttered with intent to hurt, to bruise, and kill, they wander back to him who sent them forth, and him they bruise and kill. So it's the boomerang effect of our selfish, cruel creations. And sometimes, you know, when somebody does something to us, it's just our own energy that we sent forth at an earlier time, returning to us by the instrument who has been affected by what we sent forth. So there's an incredible ethical balance in our cosmos.
So that person becomes an instrument of your own karma.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. Of course, that person may have been susceptible to it, mm-hmm. because a truly good person wouldn't necessarily be victimized by the hateful thoughts that you sent forth. It's someone who resonates to it. But, you know, in the last analysis, we do get what we deserve. And this law of justice really is operative. And, you know, where people make the mistake is they say, I want revenge. This person has wronged me. I want to see them get their just deserts now. But then the old saying is, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. So in other words, it's the big system which takes care of justice. And if you try to take justice into your own hands, you're acting like an Aries in a Libran system. And it just doesn't work. Then you are prosecuted for for that very thing.
But it also works the other way around.
Yes?
I mean, the good you send out will come back.
Exactly. That, but that is... That is also true, and it comes back having helped the whole system, and you are lifted. You know, but sometimes they say, watch out for your good karma, because it can bind you as securely as bad karma. You know what I'm saying? In other words, suddenly good fortune happens to you, and you find out that in a way it can also enslave you. Now I know that that sounds unlikely.
Stops you striving.
Yeah, it can
stop you striving.
Yeah, it can do that, or it can encumber you. Now, for instance, we're told that a master is often handicapped by the devotion of his students. In other words, they mean nothing but good, apparently. But all of these, as a matter of fact, the master in the ashram has to be protected from the devotional waves of his students, and there's someone assigned to ward them off. So I think it's very interesting that excessive good can be as dangerous as bad. Maybe you even learn more from the bad. So again, the noble middle path, which is disidentified with both the material good and the material bad, is said to be the path for us to choose. Like I say, and I talked about it yesterday, a person who has everything in life may become encumbered, fettered, bound by all those apparently good things around them. Okay, but the law of return is true, and that's why Christ said a very interesting thing, right? It's better to give than to receive, because giving is receiving when you give what is good. All right, let's go on. The third formula. Third, those which when sounded produce two results, the sending forth of the perfected creation. Now that means later, after all of the different sheaths are added, so that it may take to itself a physical body. So let's just say it is perfected before it has a physical body. So meaning perfection is reached, perfection is physical, perfection is mental, emotional, and etheric. And then the physical body is just an automatic aggregation of dense physical atoms around a perfected form. Remember we said, what if we treated our etheric body as if it was the real physical body? So there's formulas for sending forth of the... In other words, we oftentimes think, now it's perfect because it has a physical form. But we can say, now it's perfect because it has the right etheric form. And the rest becomes automatic. Once magic is known and understood. Now we're not there yet. So we can have something very good etherically, but we still have to, with our hands and our feet, we still have to build it. We have to build it. The true magician won't have to do that. The true magician just sends it forth. It will build itself, or build itself through others. And next, this formula disperses the building forces, now that their work is complete. If you don't disperse the building forces, you are also in trouble, because they need to be sent back to where they came from. Okay, so here are the three formulas. The formula is based on three notes of the ego, the devas, and the thought form itself, or ego, man, and thought form, plus devas. There's protective formulas which insulate you, and there's the formulas for sending forth to the physical plane and for dispersing astral forces. The last set of formulas, the one that sends it forth and disperses, you know, in magic there's something called a banishing ritual, isn't there? In other words, whatever you gather, you have to send back to where it came, right? It's, you might call it the law of restitution, the law of giving back, right? Okay. If it aggregates, it de-aggregates. Okay. The last set of formulas is exceedingly interesting, and were they not so powerful, the magician might find himself cumbered, you know, obstructed, with the produce of his thought and the prey of a vital form and of certain devas of the waters who would never leave him until they had completely drained from him all the waters of his nature, absorbing it into their own nature and producing his astral death. Then DK, you know, he tells us he's known a few to whom this has happened. Well, you know, a lot of experimentation lies ahead. And he says that in discovering what the Deva kingdom is, man will suffer considerably in future centuries due to this meeting of man and Deva when there is not full knowledge of what is happening. So anyway, we have this kind of banishing, the formulas sent forth to the physical level for dispersing the astral forces. You send the creation forth and you get rid of, and you send the devas of the waters, back. Those two things happen. Otherwise we have astral death. Now he talks about what it is. This curious phenomenon would then be seen of the ego or solar angel being incarnated in the mental sheath, yet separated from the physical body, owing to the occult drowning of the magician. Okay, so second definition of drowning. Right? What was the first definition? Okay. Oh, one day of drowning. First definition is very simple, right? It was this first definition. Was being overcome by the astral elementals. And we would call it just simply emotionalism. The second definition is much more serious. Losing all of your astral waters. No emotional body. You would still have your permanent atom. You would still have your astral permanent atom, but all of the astral atoms that have been gathered around you to create an astral body would be absorbed by these certain kinds of water devas, who would leave you virtually without an astral body, and so the ego would not be able to get through to your physical body. And what does this mean? This means that if the ego cannot get through, then this is very interesting. It means that egoic force must reach the physical permanent atom through the astral permanent atom, or through the astral vehicle. Okay, whoa. Okay, astral vehicle. So let him say a little more about this. There is nothing left for the ego to do then but to snap the sutra atma or thread and sever all connection with the lowest sheath. So this would mean physical plane death. This lowest sheath then may persist for a short time according to the strength of the animal life, but more probably death would immediately ensue. Several magicians have perished thus. Okay, so there's this third group of protective formulas. They make sure your thought form doesn't come back to you, and they make sure that you get rid of the Agni Suryan so they don't look at your astral body as if it was lunch, you know, and just sort of absorb it and, you know, happily go on their way while you're left with no means for the ego to communicate with the dense physical body. These are interesting things. What thoughts do they arouse in you? Or no thoughts?
Why would they do that?
That's their nature to, though those, you know, because they're unconscious beings. It's just their nature to grow and to absorb more of what is like themselves. So, you are left unprotected, and their tendency, he says, certain kinds of astral devas will attract to themselves what you have, because the ring pass knot that seals your astral body is somehow breached. You don't have an insulation that's proper. And besides, what are they going to do? Now they've built the form, now what do? They look around for some other activity. And they look to, and every form seeks to strengthen itself. Anyway, for us it just has to be taken as a fact. We don't know why it is exactly, but they would never leave him until they had completely drained from him all the waters of his nature, absorbing it into their own nature. That's their nature to do that.
Have you got any examples of that?
Who has suffered from this? I don't know any people.
Have you got any theories?
Personally, I don't know any people personally to whom this has happened. But I would say that in the future it will happen more often.
Mm.
Because there's going to be a lot of experimentation performed under ignorance, don't you think? So anyway, when I read this stuff anyway, I feel a great wave of caution come over me. And I say, I would rather know what I'm doing than just start doing. In other words, before I quote-unquote do magic, I want to know all the rules, all the laws, and I want to make sure that procedure is undertaken correctly. It'd be like a surgeon who says, oh, hey, let's operate, without ever studying the disease or what's going on.
Would that affect on one just the reincarnation of that ego?
Yeah, because it would
sure
be
it
yeah,
would.
Yeah. It would be a destruction. And whatever we destroy has to be replaced. But remember that what happens see, first of all, what happens is your purpose gets cut short. That's one thing. But then as you start appropriating your vehicles, you gather matter step after step. So there comes a time when through the astral permanent atom, a note goes forth which gathers the appropriate matter for an astral body.
Yeah.
But I'm sure the event would leave its mark.
It would, wouldn't it?
I think we can slow ourselves down in so many ways.
Mm.
And one of the ways is by what DK calls tampering with energies we should not be touching. It's a blundering method of getting into things without knowing what you're doing. Okay. So this is another definition of occult drowning. In one case you are overcome by the waters, and in another case all your waters are taken away. Both of these are occult drowning. How did he describe it up above? Let's see, if I go a little higher and I just use the word drown. Okay. The magician guards himself from drowning or from coming under the influence of the water or astral elementals. Well, coming under the influence doesn't sound as severe as having all your waters drained out, does it? You know, under the influence of the astral elementals. Living while under the influence. Okay. Alright, and then the other one is a much more severe form, occult drowning of the magician. Now we go on. The Agni Suryans respond to the sound, etc. Let's read it again. The waters ebb and flow. We've read the cosmic fire part. Let the magician guard himself from drowning at the point where land and water meet. Meaning, if he stands where land and water meet, he won't drown. That's one of the meanings of this. The midway spot, which is neither dry nor wet, must provide the standing place whereon his feet are set. When water, land, and air meet, there is the place for magic to be wrought. Notice here, and he'll point this out, when is a time, is an adverb? When? Where? I don't know how we describe it, but anyway, when is a word that relates to time, and there is a word that relates to place.
Do you think it might have something also to do with astral travelling? Because when one comes out of one's physical, it's a dangerous place, isn't it?
You're not
really protected. And formulas could take you right out of the physical. And that would be a very dangerous thing.
Yeah.
You have to keep pulling yourself back.
Could be. I think a lot of people are astral traveling today because it's an old Atlantean ability, okay? But probably much fewer people are having their waters totally drained away, leading to the inability of the ego to make progress on the physical plane. So although it can be dangerous on the astral plane if one doesn't know what one's doing, I don't think it's as severe as what he's talking about right here. Remember that we are supposed to be led in our astral body into the ashram of the master by the teachers in the new schools. That's one of the things that will go on. The director of the school will be able to instruct and take the student with at night to certain vibratory locations that we call the ashram. Now, you know, obviously...
That would be protected, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, and remember, it's not the ashram, because the ashram is on the Buddhic plane, so you're not going to the Buddhic plane in your astral body, but you're going to go to a place that reflects it. And so astral travel, even though it is a very old ability, and I'm sure many or maybe all of us have had the experience of what it is, it's not useless. It has its point. And just like any old psychic ability, it can be put to good effect. Okay. So anyway, he tells us it would be advisable to read a treatise on cosmic fire, and we have done that. Then he tells us, and maybe we will agree, it will be noted how extremely abstruse it is, and how full of almost blind occult information. I wonder if we agree. I think so. This should, however, be studied. The word astral plane should also be looked up, and a general idea gained as to its nature and its function, as the battleground of the senses, and the place from which white magic is wrought, the astral plane. So that sounds...
It says which magic is wrought. It doesn't say white magic.
From which magic is... No. And I told you the story, you know, that DK evicted from his group an astral magician. And he said to this man, he said, look, you use the many words of the astral magician and not the word of the soul. So in this particular case, the psychism that this man was involved in on the astral plane was preventing his own soul contact and was contaminating the group. So the battleground of the senses, though, is kind of an interesting term. I'm not exactly sure what he means. Do you have any thoughts about that? I mean, one thing he did say this. He said, if a form looks like a form from the physical plane, it is an astral form. You know, because sometimes we say, oh, I went to Shambhala and I went to the hierarchy and I went, you know, and then the person describes it. And it looked like this, and this was the shape, and this was the color, and it's just so obviously an astral reflection of these energy patterns and states that exist on higher planes with no visual imagery at all. So, if it reflects the senses, in other words, I want to say that the astral plane does reflect the sensory world. Okay. This and from the plane which magic is wrong. The intelligent and constructive desire of the white magician, acting under instruction of his own soul and therefore occupied with group work, is the motivating power behind all magical phenomena. Does anything strike you about this sentence? The intelligent and constructive desire of the white magician, acting under the instruction of his own soul and therefore occupied with group work, what does that tell us? If you act under the instruction...
It's expected of you that you become group conscious.
Yes.
When you are under instruction from your own soul.
Yes, and going maybe even further than that, if you act under instruction from your soul, that instruction, if followed, will necessarily involve you in group consciousness. Because the soul is group conscious. You know, and so many people said, oh, my soul told me what to do. Okay? And they do some very selfish things which hurt the group, and they say, but my soul said I had to do that. And the very fact that it didn't contain any group sensitivity at all shows you it wasn't the soul speaking at all. So this is a, you know, let's just say when the soul speaks, the first thing to notice is responsibility. Because the word of the soul always induces the fulfillment of responsibility. And what is responsibility? It has to do with group consciousness, you know? It has to do with the fulfillment of your duty to the group. Okay. The magical work is begun in the magician's... This magical work is begun in the magician's own life, after the soul speaks, extends to the world of the astral plane, and from thence, when potent there, can begin to demonstrate on the physical plane and on the higher planes eventually. So, you like we talked about yesterday, you need a certain astral buildup before anything can really happen. Can you talk about that in practical terms? In other words, you got a good idea, and now comes fostering the desire to do it. And without sufficient desire energy, will it happen? Just think of these words. It was a good idea, but nobody cared about it. What does that tell you? It was a good idea. And nobody worked up the desire to do it. And therefore, it just didn't happen. Well, that could have happened in my life. Yeah, but I guess I just didn't care enough. How many times do we encounter that? I know what's right, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it. It's the same thing. So we have a big job on the astral plane to make sure that consecrated desire is created to a sufficient intensity to produce precipitation. And you can almost say, look at the world today, good or bad. What happens when love or hate reaches a sufficient degree of emotional intensity? It will precipitate, won't it? So look at the buildup of hate that's going on in the world now. And also among many people, love among. But the hate is noticeable. I mean, because it's, you know, it's everywhere around us, it's in the news media. What happens if that hate continues to intensify to a certain level where precipitation becomes inevitable? See, and that's where our work comes in, to diffuse the hate on the astral plane before it precipitates. And you know, but you know the old saying, you can't hate those who hate. It's in the Bible. Hatred ceaseth not by hatred. So this kind of fourth ray harmonizing work, or getting the second ray into the astral plane, it is so utterly necessary. And I'll bet the hierarchy is doing a lot of that. Manipulating certain currents to try to diffuse the hatred which could precipitate in war. Okay. If you listen to your soul, you will always be involved in group work. And if you listen to your soul, the magical work begins in your life and then goes to the astral plane and eventually onto higher planes. We shall therefore take a good deal of time over this rule, for it covers the immediate work and activity of the intelligent aspect. It is the most important rule in the book from the standpoint of the average student. I guess, I don't know if we would have guessed that reading it, would we, necessarily? The Agnisurians respond to the sound. Let the magician guard himself from drowning at the spot where land and water meet. The midway place, which is neither, midway spot, which is neither dry nor wet, must provide the standing place whereon his feet are set. When water, land, and air meet, there is the place for magic to be wrought. The most important rule in the book. It cannot be understood where there is no soul contact. Nor can the magical force of the soul work out in manifestation upon the physical plane until the meaning of its esoteric phrases has been somewhat wrought out in the inner experience of the magician. So he's saying, you know, unless we understand the basics of this rule, forget soul magic working through our lives. So it sounds pretty important. Any thoughts on this so far? Except that it is abstruse, it is obscure, it is difficult.
Because it's meant to be.
Well, you know, it's veiled. It's veiled on purpose. The Agnisurians respond to the sound, the waters ebb and flow. Let the magician guard himself from drowning at the point where land and water meet. In other words, no magician can be an emotional basket case. No magician can be out of emotional control. No white magician. Every magician has to learn how to work from the etheric center of power. Every magician must focus his energy, which means, that's what standing means, doesn't it? And here I stand. That means I focus my energy, my consciousness, and I don't deviate from that focus. That's what it means to stand whereon his feet are set. And the midway place, you know, in some ways, I'm just beginning to realize this word air can relate to the ethers. Note that air can be a word for ears. I'm seeing that. Where water, land, and air meet, there is the place for mesh to be wrought. So air is between them, water is the astral, land is the dense physical. And we, as potential magicians, have to learn to take our stand at the midway spot in the middle of the physical etheric brain, where a magnetic field is created which is responsive to the soul and to the spirit, and from there, at that place of will, at that place of vision, that's where we learn to work. So, you know, unless the crown center is somewhat active, the power of the soul will not descend into the middle of the head, and that magnetic place will not be created, that midway spot where we take our stand will not be created, and then to a certain extent the circulation between Alta, Ajna, and Crown has to be going to create that magnetic field. And what creates this circulation, long evolution, and the ability to blend the three aspects until the chakras in the lower part of the body and the torso have risen up into the head, there will be no triangle here to create a magnetic vortex from which we can work. So obviously, it's for advanced people who are getting their chakras to send the energy up to the corresponding higher chakra. It doesn't mean that you have to complete from the base of the spine to the crown of your head before you can do white magic, because you would be a master if you completed that. The base of the spine center is the most important at the fifth initiation. But unless your sacral center is moving to your throat, unless your solar plexus is moving to your heart, we won't be wanting to try this kind of, and of course, unless occult meditation is invoking soul energy into the center of the head, we don't even touch this process. And probably we wouldn't be interested in it anyway. Any questions on this?
Well, that reminds me of a healing, because what you do is you don't work with the physical body, you don't work with the astral, but you work with the etheric body.
Yes. Let us pause there for a minute, because the third group, the third seed group, which is a seed for a special type of service, it's called magnetic healers. And the magnetic healers, the first thing they do, of course, is exactly what you say. They work with the etheric body, and the book mostly is about magnetic healing in relation to the etheric body, magnetic and radiatory. But now, you know, something we should bear in mind, and which really struck me, that group contains two other kinds of workers. One, the next group is astral healers, or psychologists, basically, and the group beyond that is mental healers. I would call them philosophers, in the right sense of the word. So right now we're very concentrated on these magnetic techniques and the etheric body. That's our province, okay? But if we're also going to be able to heal the astral body and heal the mental body, techniques will have to be worked out for that too.
There are some techniques, but the main thing you do is working with the etheric.
Exactly. The main work is with the etheric body. But just think now, there are astral chakras and there are mental chakras too, and there is astral chaos and mental chaos, and there is right astral organization, right mental organization. So those days will come. Now the first thing we have to do is clean up the etheric plane. Remember, I read yesterday that little meditation about focus the force at the jewel's point and find the veil that it can touch and so forth. Our first point of attack is the ethers. And the first point of the healer is etheric magnetic radiatory healing. After that, the attack will be on glamour. And that attack will be accompanied by methods of astral healing, which will be, I think, very... well, the Christ energy will really have to be used, very strong. And mental healing will be quite different and very interesting. And DK doesn't really get into that so much. But I think that it relates to the true meaning of philosophy. That's what I think. In other words, the true love of wisdom, bringing wisdom and light into the mental body. And that's a form of healing for the third group. Yes?
Isn't that when you just talk to people and try to help?
You do, and but of course psychologists do that too, don't they? And even, you know, magnetic healers and so forth, they talk to people. But what are the thoughts that you convey to the mind that is sick? See, what is a sick mind? He says most of our diseases do not have origin in the mind anyway. He tells us that. He says it's mostly astral and etheric at the present time. That's where our diseases are originating. But there is such a thing as a sick mind. There is such a thing as a mind that is in need of the healing energy of the soul. So what do you say to such people? Now, in psychology, there's a branch of psychology, maybe you've heard of it, it's called cognitive therapy. It's done by psychologists who have a lot of fifth ray and third ray. They say man is in trouble because he doesn't think straight. So then they speak to the mind and try to have you understand that your thoughts are in error, and this is causing bad emotions and bad reactions below.
A lot of people with obsessive compulsive disorder go in for cognitive therapy.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's interesting.
But also schizophrenic and paranoia.
Paranoia?
Yes. Because you can reason with people.
Reason, yes. Yeah. So let's just say that the power to reason in the light, reason with wisdom, will be part of the mental healing. Now, you can say, well, in a way, DK has discussed this throughout his whole books, but he didn't direct it to us through the third C group yet, even though he says it's a part of the third C group. Yeah.
Well, the kind of mental healing is, in my view, is also that you can talk to a client about what kind of beliefs he has.
What kind of
beliefs?
Relief?
Beliefs.
Oh, yeah, beliefs. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And how do you relate to the fact that you're going to die? How do you relate to the fact that you are living right now? That's a kind of also mending and healing any physical disease.
Yes. There are many illusory beliefs, and if you hold those beliefs, you will become psychologically sick. There are toxic beliefs. And I would say that we have many toxic belief systems out there right now affecting millions and millions of people. And they adhere to them with almost fanaticism. Toxic belief systems adhered to fanatically. Now, you know, not all those people, however, are susceptible to reason and to science. Not yet. Not yet. Anyway, that's part of the...
always so little seed. You can lay a little seed in everybody when you talk to them.
I think the time will come in our society when we know so much more about the inner worlds that it will be reasonable to dispel these illusions. Right now, the mind of humanity is full of illusion. And illusion can only be dispelled by pure reason, by intuition. So the time will come when we can address that. But I think Master DK is putting first things first. I think he's saying, let's heal the etheric body of humanity and of the planet. I think that's his first line of attack. Just like the first line of attack against the Black Lodge is to get them off the ethers. Drive them back to the astral plane and get them out of the ethers so we can at least have the what would you say, the leisure, the non-threatened circumstances in which we can stage our next attack against glamour. Right now, in a chaotic world, when you don't even know where your next mouthful is coming from, you know, you have total physical insecurity. You don't know whether you're going to be killed by war or starved to death or any, you know, that's because the violent forces are working out in the ethers and precipitate onto the physical plane. And until we straighten that out, we cannot get ourselves together to mount the next attack. But you know what? We as disciples, we might work in a slightly different manner. You know what I mean? In other words, we almost begin our work from above below. And we actually have to attack these problems occultly. So we do work on the mental plane now. And we do work with the dissipation of glamour now. But the first thing that humanity is going to get is how to work with the ethers, because that's what's being discovered now by science. Then
it's time to build the anti-corona, isn't it? Because otherwise, what would be the point? If, you know, if that is so necessary to bring the knowledge down from above. So it's what we're doing already, or we're trying to
do. We do. Yes. But then we know there's an above. And we know the techniques to reach it. But what can the average human being, intelligent human being, do at first when they don't care or know about these inner worlds? They can at least, oh, science has just shown me there's a bioelectric field. Oh, well, what's that all about? Well, the next thing you know, they're into the ethers without having to believe all the stuff we believe about the Antikoran and all the rest of it. At least they can do something occultly that they couldn't do before. So it's almost like humanity is working itself up while we and the hierarchy are working ourselves down, attacking the problem at its roots. Yes?
Yes, when we recall it, when you say some words to a client, and it is as a key that will knock up something, is this mental? Is this a healing word?
Yeah. If you look at how the Blessed One works, the Blessed One, remember, is the monad, but everything we do is the monad anyway. So the Blessed One is Arrow. Here is the Blessed One at work on the second ray. And he says, the power to build anew, the right use of the word, and the using of the light, these will release the hidden Blessed One. So we, as therapists, we are involved in offering the word of release, the word of liberation.
Yes, because it's not always that you know what you're saying.
No.
It comes from
your own,
yes.
Yeah, and then your client takes it as a hint or a point of revelation, and you might not have even meant it. Yes, exactly. Well, look, we have to be very careful with our words, because our words can put other people in prison, or our words can liberate and release people. Well, no, I do understand. It just depends on. I would say, look, you know, if we're soul attuned, certain words will come through us because we will be soul guided. And other times, things just come through us and we don't know why, and they can be useful. But the general business of attending to our words as potent instruments of imprisonment or release, this is very important. Okay. Well, it's time to... We're being forced to eat again. We live to eat again. Yes?
Page.
Esoteric Psychology, page... Some page. 36. Yes, these are monadic techniques. seven monadic rays and how the monad returns to itself. Esoteric psychology. Okay, that's it. Otherwise, the cook will wonder what happened to us. Or would you prefer to just work through lunch and fast?
Well, it's interesting.
Yes, okay.
Do you have half past two then?